across the galaxy. This is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
Hello and welcome to the Free Zone. Wow, guys. I mean, if we're not moving into the fringe era right now, then, well, we never will. But to understand all of this, we really need to go back. We need to go back, way back to understand civilization, understand where we've been and how we got here. This has been one of the most guarded secrets out there. And it even seems that the governments have gone around to destroy and eliminate evidence that would explain what was going on in our ancient past. Concepts like ancient aliens have led everybody to believe that some mysterious group of beings came from another planet and planted pyramids on our planet, and then humans just kind of worked around them. Come on, guys. Humanity has been around for a long time. Civilizations have risen and fallen, and everything has set the stage for now. As we start to witness so many of the things that are depicted in these ancient past architecture, and we're starting to maybe understand what it was about and what it was for. But trying to understand this takes a lot of time, a lot of thought, a lot of listening, you know? And contributions to this fringe community can sometimes come from where you least expect it. And tonight, we are talking with Derek Murphy, and he's a perfect example of this. He's known as the Night Stalker. I always wanted that job just for that title. I don't know why. But, you know, Derek works overnight at the supermarket, right? And he listens to all of you, all of the shows that come out, all this countless hours of podcasts and lectures and fringe information, and it just opens you. I've always said to you that I never went looking for any of this information. I just seem to be the perfect vessel to receive it. And this is the same for him. And Derek lives in Massachusetts, and a lot of mystery revolves around Massachusetts. I once had lunch with George Bush's daughter there, or was it his niece? I don't know. We were at the university. So a lot going on in the world inside of this possible unified theory, ley lines, portals, and this lost ancient information that really ties to the nature of reality. So we're going to get deep into this taking it right up into pop culture. I'm really excited. And we have a lot of news to cover too, to look into. Now, Derek, he's not a published author or a podcaster. No, but he's called in on many shows and blown many minds. And these are the type of minds that I want to invite to the Free Zone so that we can get deeper into this hidden story. So welcome, Derek, to the Free Zone.
Hey, Freeman, how's it going? Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to be here. And This is a trip for me. This is really, really wild.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's an honor. It's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, I started this whole career by wandering the earth and telling the story of what I thought was the history of planet Earth, you know, covering the ancient Sumerians up into the Egyptians, and then finally discovering the esoteric and occult. And, you know, that's how this story moves. And it's actually very difficult to find people that have the time and the patience to dig deep into these things.
I mean, that's kind of really all I got. I'm working this menial job, so I get to just I have the ability to listen to stuff. I'm on my own. I'm in my own aisle, so I just put in my headphones and I let the great researchers of the current era blow my mind with crazy threads, and I watch out,
because you're going to end up being one of them.
No, I don't think so. But that's nice of you to say, and I just hope we can tie some threads together and make some connections today.
Yeah, well, let's start with the bad news. Folks, Tracy Twyman has died. We don't know the specifics. We don't know what's occurred. We know there were some... She had warned of some threats and even just, you know, well, we don't know, but we're very sad that Tracy Twyman has passed. It was kind of a shock, and it continues to mystify me that every magician that I've had on this program has died at a young age. Every last one of them, just out of the blue. Very strange. Tracy had a big impact on you, didn't she, Derek?
Yeah, I reference her all the time when I'm talking about this stuff. So I had already planned to bring her up several times when we go through the research. And I had was like, you ran her show, her appearance on your show recently. And I was listening to it, and when we were trying to set this up, and I was like, oh, this is exactly the type of stuff I'm talking about. And her information, the first time I'd heard her a couple of years ago, is actually what sparked my entire research journey, you can say. Like, I listened to an interview with her talking about her Mithras research and her looking at London and the Bloomberg buildings and the sacred geometry and all the ancient mythology tied in with that. And the very next day I found one of these pieces of information about my own area in Massachusetts. And that started my trip down this crazy rabbit hole. So I'm a huge fan of her, and it's a very sad day. I was devastated to hear what happened.
She's shocking.
Her ability to find these unbelievably unique and just wild threads is unparalleled. She's it's a great loss to the community.
Definitely. Yeah, you're not going to find many people that are going to channel Baphomet on their Ouija board, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. And she can just dissect these obscure things that the rest of the community misses, like her and Chris Knowles and people like that, who just they're few and far between. And
yes,
she was great. So it's very sad.
Well, it definitely sounds like you started way on the fringe.
I jumped in the deep end, pretty much.
I mean, in other strange news, just speaking of Fringe, which is a very interesting J.J. Abrams Bad Robot production, I am a big fan of Fringe, but this is not from Fringe. This is actual news. Yale scientists restore the brain function of 32 dead pigs using a BrainX to keep these brains alive for 36 hours. If I remember, BrainX was a serum that they would inject into the brain, and it would simulate the oxygen and electricity going into a brain. And they managed to, so the pigs had been dead for 4 hours. Now, in Fringe, the television show, they actually do this very thing. And if a body's dead 6 hours in J.J. Abrams' production, then they can no longer talk to the brain. But they did this in the television show. But here it is in real. This is Nature Magazine, folks. Same people that brought up the cloning of mummies and stuff back in 84. Nature Magazine's a serious, peer-reviewed, scientific journal. And 32 dead pigs.
I'm shocked it's not 33.
Well, you know, I thought it was interesting. 32, yeah. With Yale. Exactly. Exactly. They kept these brains alive up to 36 hours. And so we are absolutely in the area of Fringe science. I mean
there's no way they're not thinking about the pigs. They're using pigs because pigs are very much like the human anatomy. Like, we dissect pig fetuses in high school because they're very much, they're almost identical to human fetuses. Like,
yes,
when they say pigs, they mean humans, basically.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Pigs, cows are very close to our genetic structure, and especially pigs. So yeah, anything done to a pig is basically the same as human trials. Yeah. You know, they're so smart, and you got to wonder about animals so much. They're basically looking a lot better than humans these days.
One of my favorite weird threads is that there's, like, when people talk about that the origins of humanity is like a genetic hybrid of indigenous species of Earth, and they talk about maybe like the very beginning was a pig chimp hybrid. Have you heard that before?
A pig what?
A pig chimp hybrid that they took chimp DNA and pig DNA, and that's the reason why we're the only primate that doesn't have a bone in our penis, and that's evidence that we're part pig, maybe.
Huh?
Have you heard that before? That's a weird one. But
I take it weird. I once lived with the Bride of Christ, a woman who believed she was the Bride of Christ and carried around the Holy Grail, which was a bowl made of a meteor.
Wow.
And she claimed that pigs were actually human dog hybrids. And wow. That's why it was forbidden to eat pigs, because it was cannibalism.
That's where I was going to go with it. Like that's exactly. I haven't heard anybody say this before, but I was wondering why people. They say my grandfather was a pig farmer, so people say different cultures don't eat pigs because pigs are known as being the filthiest animal. But like my grandfather always said that pigs are actually the cleanest animal, and that's like the rolling around in their own filth is a way for them to clean themselves. It's the opposite. So that I was like, so that idea that that's the basis of all these cultures not eating pork and pig products didn't seem right with me. But the idea that maybe some kind of ancient knowledge that the human origins or some kind of deep esoteric is involved with pigs, and that's why we can't eat them, has always intrigued me. That's cool. That's crazy. You said that. That's amazing.
Yeah, you know, maybe these weird threads. You don't know where they're going to come from.
Maybe she was right. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. Weird things happen with the Bride of Christ. I'll tell you that. I lived there for like 5 months, I think, in this abandoned high school in Cherryville, Missouri. Wow. And I just found her by a freak accident while I was looking for the rainbow gathering. And I got quite intrigued. And she showed me some things that tripped me out. You know, like the first time I met her, she comes running into the room and the news was there to report on the rainbow gathering, but she wanted, of course, them to all know that she was the Bride of Christ. So she comes in and she looks like this cross between Sarah Connor and Carrie. Yeah. And she comes storming in, you know, and she's like, she looks at me and she looks at the guy next to me and says, "You didn't tell him, did you? You didn't tell him." And he's like, "Well, what was I supposed to say? You know, I'm damned if I do and I'm damned if I don't." And I don't know what they're talking about. You know, it was my first moment in the room, you know. Yeah. And she comes over and grabs my arm. She says, "If I told you I had a videotape of Christ coming on the cloud, would you want to see it?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah, certainly. I definitely want to see that." And she's like, see, and storm back out again. Yeah. I did eventually see the video. Yeah, it was really bizarre. It was first thing, it opens with a video of a rainbow going right into her chimney. Or at least, you know, from where she was standing, it looked that way. It was basically, it looked like it was, the video, you know, this is VHS days. Yeah. You know what I mean? This is before computers. Yeah. Actually, I brought the first computer to her home, but she was so excited. The Bride of Christ was going to be on the World Wide Web, but I never did get signed in. I never did get it to happen. This is back in the days of AOL, you know?
Yeah.
She showed me the letters IHS in the clouds. And this was before chemtrails. And she was, you know, it was there. It was definitely there. It was a bizarre cloud phenomenon that made a perfect IHS in the sky. And then you see this, it's the Greek letters for Jesus. And so, there's this cross laying on the clouds. And as they look at the clouds in the camera, it's seriously, I've seen this video a bunch of times. It looks like a lamb laying down next to a lion. I mean, it's like, you know, perfect cloud formation. And I've seen it so many times that I'm just like, this is crazy. And then it looked like a serpent swimming into the lion's mouth, a golden serpent, which you would believe was the sun cresting behind the cloud, but it didn't seem like there were any rays or anything, just this gold line. So they zoom in on this golden serpent and it has a cross arm. Now it looks like a cross. They zoom in more and that cross arm is actually a giant obelisk crystal that's above the cloud. And the reason it looks like a cross is because it's reflecting gold onto the cloud. So all of a sudden, there's this giant obelisk, golden obelisk, crystal-looking thing above this cloud. And then it fades away, but it leaves three points of light right there at the apex of the obelisk. And she has with her the Holy Grail, what she considered the Holy Grail. And it was a bowl made of a meteorite. And it had really weird, like, it wasn't good for anything. So
What was the significance behind it in her mind?
Like, well, that's the thing. The bowl itself was basically useless because as a meteorite, it was porous.
Yeah.
So you couldn't be using it for post or for grinding things, you know. Yeah. And it had a convex face at the bottom that appeared to be, I think, a cat. Can't remember exactly now, strangely. They had this thing x-rayed. They had it checked out. It definitely was a meteorite. And she said her dad had it in the military and she stole it from him, but that she had grown up in the house that the exorcism happened, that they made the movie about. Yeah. And that she had found it in the backyard, and a little man came to the door and tried to get it back from her. And she said that the man's eyes were completely white, and he,
like a man in black.
Yeah. She said he was very small, and that he was actually the guy who had suffered the exorcism, that it wasn't, you know, Reagan, the girl, it was this little man, and he had come back for this bowl, and she lied and said she didn't have it. Now her and her mom sat around the dinner table one day and told me stories of what it was like to live in the exorcism house. And you just had to believe them because they were bouncing off one another. And either this was the greatest lie, they were either both completely crazy, which is possible. Yeah. But at the same time, their stories jived. You know, they were between the two of them. This, you know, I started to believe. And I even had an encounter with mysterious men that showed up in suits, came up, asked for an introduction, got my name. I never got their names.
Yeah.
And then they just vanished. Like, you know, this is an abandoned high school in Cherryville, Missouri. There's nothing there. There's no houses. Yeah. There's no nothing around it. The only thing is a convenience store across the street. So having suited men show up and try to get my name and then just vanish was pretty bizarre. I saw two massive green fireballs fly over this house. And the day that I left, 10 representatives of the tribes of Judah in their full rabbinical robes showed up to have a debate with the Bride of Christ. I mean, you know, these type of things don't happen. We're talking about, it's crazy.
That sounds like a hotspot. I mean, maybe the exorcism was caused because she was living on, or the previous girl was living on this hotspot.
It was a different place. Exorcism. Yeah. Yeah. Her and her 13 children lived in this abandoned high school. But anyway, that's how weird life can get, folks, if you actually get out there and see and aren't afraid. I had a friend that was with me and he's like, I'm not listening to this crack addict Waco Wacko, because this was just of the time of Waco, you know. And he's like, he stormed off and he actually hitchhiked home, got a ride by a cop, took him all the way back to Kansas. I don't know. It's like, you know, some people just aren't ready to take in this kind of knowledge, Derek.
I mean, from the Bride of Christ, you can only receive so much knowledge before your mind just explodes, you know?
Yeah, yeah. man, it got deep. It got dark. Yeah. It got weird. I'm not even going to go there because that's a whole nother show, which I have done.
I'll be listening to that one as soon as we finish this.
So, in other news, the idea of storming Area 51. Good idea? Bad idea? Did you hear about this?
I did hear about this. This is ridiculous. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen. Like, people are already making the memes about only like 10 people are going to show up and everyone else is going to be hiding, like behind a barrier, just watching them and taking pictures of them. But like,
right.
The idea that any amount of people are going to, so like, why would they tell anybody in the first place? In the second place, there's obviously nothing in there anymore, or that's not where they're doing the real stuff. If that's like,
right.
That's been on the, been talking about Area 51 for as long as I've been alive. So
right.
There's no way they're talking about it if there's anything significant. I mean, they probably have some kind of technology there, obviously, but I don't imagine the real good stuff's there anyways. So it's a shame for those 8 people will get arrested for nothing.
Yeah, hopefully they don't. The one thing that excited me about the idea was people are finally trying to play with reality. This is something that I really want people to do. You know, just get out there, play with reality. It's fine. You know what I mean? We need to quit taking it all so serious because that's what makes this all real. Yeah. Right?
The idea of like a mass group storming these locations is right up my alley and I'm all for that. But just maybe don't tell everybody on the internet before you do it. You know, maybe tell everybody afterwards.
Right. Like, yeah, and don't do it as violence. Do it as play.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Like, have a good time with this. Dress up as a clown, show up, you know what I mean? Like, it's all good.
Yeah.
But this also then brings out the idea of what's now known as the Wilson leak. Hmm. And this is, folks, for you that don't know, Admiral Wilson leaked a document. Well, actually, it wasn't leaked by Wilson. But either way, Admiral Wilson attempted to gain access to classified UFO programs that involved clandestine corporate people reverse engineering retrieved extraterrestrial craft. Yeah. So we get this document that shows, I mean, it's curious to me, Derek, that, you know, it states, well, we have one flying saucer that's not destroyed, one that we could still work with. So it's not like, you know, we have a whole fleet of things going on or, you know, showing off. I don't know the document, but what it really shows is that the private corporations have gotten control of all of this extraterrestrial tech, and an admiral can't even get in to see what's going on. So that's really what we get out of this.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that jives with everything that I know about these corporate, like that's the current, like in my research, I'll talk about like the chain of custody of these portal locations and how like they're passed from the, like these Atlantean times, like the pre-flood global civilization to like the indigenous cultures, like after the flood to like the imperialists and colonialists and early Americans. And then the current and through the military, but the current possessors of a lot of these primary regions of places like Raytheon and these different locations, like they're obviously interested in this stuff the same as we are. So their experiments are very much intersecting all these, like the idea that they're talking about UFOs as like, I believe that they're doing that, but if they're telling us about it, to me, that just screams, don't look at what else we're doing with this stuff, with this kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Yeah, there's always a reason to reveal when they do. You know, Epstein, UFOs. I mean, they got, you know, got what's, President
like,
Trump.
Yeah, like what bigger things is happening that they're talking to us about UFOs now? Like, what is so big that, like, that UFOs is being used? I mean, like they need to use UFOs to distract us from this, from whatever. It must be really big. What I'm trying to say, you know?
Right, right. And also the idea that they're setting America up for the fall. So as long as we look like the bad guys, you know, you don't hear about other corporations, you don't hear about other governments, you know, it's always America, America, America.
Oh, totally.
You know,
so for me, I mean, as far as all these leaks and these UFO, this new recent UFO news and all this, these Navy pilots talking about the stuff, like I think we should analyze like what they're saying at face value, but then also consider that like there's a reason why they're feeding us this information and analyze it from multiple angles and not just bank into like, it's here, it's definitely, this is it, it's happening, they're giving us this real information. Like hit it from all angles, like,
right,
you know, one being maybe it's a complete lie, the other being like okay, maybe it's true, what does that mean for the bigger picture? You know, like, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but and it could easily tie into this whole idea that they're trying to open these portals and it's shaking the fabric of reality, and that there's things. I don't know if you want to get into that yet.
Let's get into it, because you brought up Atlantis, and one of the things that had always intrigued me were these merfolk and the idea of fish people and how, you know, humans actually have amphibian traits, which really set us apart from the other primates, that not having a penis bone, I guess. But yeah, you know, our hair flows with water, we swim, you know, it's like,
you can throw a baby into water and it'll hold its breath. If you throw
into
water, it won't.
Yeah. Right. We have web fingers, all of that.
Our first months inside the womb are in liquid, right? Like we're created in liquid.
Yeah. 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 We're totally amphibian beings. Just lost our gills. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and that's another thing, just to throw in an idea here, is that when we look at these UFOs, or as Hillary Clinton wants to point out, UAPs, they don't necessarily need to be from extraterrestrial sources. They could be Submariner. We know less about the bottom of the ocean than we know about the moon. They could be subterranean. They could be, you know, an ancient civilization that's been around forever and ever, and they're just coming up out of the earth. I mean, how would flying saucers that traveled trillions of light years suddenly crash in Roswell? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's more likely they came up out of the inner earth. And, you know, so whenever we're talking about these type of things and people quickly jump to extraterrestrial, I just like to point out that it could be Submariner, it could be subterrestrial. It doesn't have to be extraterrestrial.
Yeah. Together,
and, right?
Of everything, yeah.
And then interdimensional, right?
Yeah, as time we bring travel in. And all that kind of stuff, and aliens that live underwater and time travel and have evolved gills and went back in time and moved somewhere else and went inside the earth. You know, it can all like overlay in infinite. Like, who knows how long we've been around for, and who knows how long all these different things have been happening? That the amount of overlay crisscrossing between all of them could be way more than we're thinking about. So just because you're talking about interdimensional, or just because you're talking about inner earth, doesn't mean you're immediately throwing away all the other stuff. It could be included at all. Like, it's all cool, you know?
Right. Exactly. And people need to recognize that we don't know jack about how the pyramids were built, about how Baalbek, Lebanon stands, on why the Incas chose the most inhabitable place to put their temples, you know? And the very lack of any of this in America. Now, Manly P. Hall put forward a book, Secret Destiny of America, which is one of my favorites. And he lays out, you see, he sees the enlightened ones as the order of the quest, a positive force for humanity trying to diminish the attacks by hierarchies like religion and others. Like, you know, they were the secret societies, the Illuminati, that were able to carry forth knowledge through the Black Ages, you know, the Dark Ages and such. And but we know for a fact that the Greeks knew about America. We have maps like the Piri-Reyes map that shows that America was known about. And here's this most beautiful continent on the damn planet, and yet just completely untouched by the megalithic builders. And it's really bizarre.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that's how it should be. And that's kind of like one of the things that kind of first got me into this specific quest is like, I'm consuming all this content, and like Graham Hancock and Robert Jock and this like ancient fringe history and all these different and like Laird Scranton and all these different researchers who are talking about around the world these amazing, advanced, lost, like as Graham Hancock says, we're a species with amnesia, and we're looking around trying to like piece together it all. And I'm looking around in my backyard thinking, why not my area? Why isn't there anything around here? So you're trying to tell me that all over the world there was some kind of these pyramid builders were building everything, and then the current world superpower, the one that we point to for all these dark conspiracies, moved to the place where there's nothing, and it just didn't seem right to me, you know. So that's kind of what made me start to dig into my specific region up here in Massachusetts.
Yeah, Massachusetts is a trip. You know, you got the Rosicrucians around there. Like I say, I had lunch with George Bush's niece at the Deerfield Academy.
Yeah. I'm from Tewksbury, and it's like near Lowell, like the Lowell Mills in like early American history, and it's like 20 minutes north of Boston and like 15 minutes south of New Hampshire.
And of course, this is where Fringe happens, the television show by J.J. Abrams. Yeah, oh yeah.
Where is it?
It's around Boston. I'm trying to think of where they're located. For some reason, I can't remember.
And like Salem Witch Trials are like 15 minutes from me. It's all that region. So it's like not in where you can find ancient stone mounds and a lot of ancient stuff, like Jim Vieira talks about stuff in Western Mass, like towards New York and stuff. And that's where you find a lot of the ancient relics, like Deerfield is out there and Suffield and UMass Amherst. But specifically near Boston in like Andover is where Phillips Academy is. That's where the Bushes went to private school. It's the number one prep school in the entire country, and like the number two is Phillips Academy Exeter, where Zuckerberg went to school. It's pretty much like a farm system for Skull and Bones and for the Ivy League secret societies. And then, if you look up Wikipedia or just their like general, if you look at the top 10 prep schools in the country, it'll give like a little blurb about them. And in this 1 or 2 paragraph blurb, it'll reference secret societies. So this place, this is known for secret societies. So going into digging for different esoteric nuggets from my region here, that's basically one of the only things I had to go off of is okay, is something going on, because it's cool, it's interesting enough for the Bushes to come here. And then also I have 2 Raytheon locations. So I'm like, well, what's up with Raytheon? Like, I find out that they're the 3rd leading defense contractor. But then I'm like, all right, so what's who founded them? Like, I like to just kind of dig into like the early things will just kind of jump out at you. So Vannevar Bush founded Raytheon, and immediately I'm like, is that Bush? Like, that was an easy one, obviously. And they're not related, as far as you can find. Like, there's Reddit threads arguing whether or not there are. But as far as we can tell, they're not related. But how many Bushes could there possibly be? But Vannevar Bush was a big time player in his day. He was around during he was at the Manhattan Project. He was at the Philadelphia Experiment. He was the, if you believe Majestic 12, he was the head of Majestic 12. There's a quote from Eisenhower saying, or from Truman saying, as far as this alien business, or as far as this Majestic business, you talk to me and you talk to Bush, meaning Vannevar Bush. And then he creates Raytheon by finding the guy who invented the microwave and buying his company and changing it to Raytheon, which, if you break that word down, means radiant god. And you can take that in any number of directions. Is that radiant god like Lucifer? Is that radiant god like those shining ones that you see on a shamanic journey? Like, we don't know, but it's a weird name for a defense contractor to have. So in my mind, all I hear is Lockheed Martin on Discovery Channel, Ancient Aliens, Lockheed Martin. That seems to be the mainstream one. But then when I don't hear Raytheon at all, and then it seems to be like they're connected in a lot of different weird things that have gone on that people like to talk about, as far as this secret technology and breakaway civilization and portals and nukes, and, you know, so that's kind of the foundation. Phillips Academy and Raytheon was kind of what I first started looking into, you know.
Yeah, without a doubt, they would pick these places. It's funny because I just keep flashing back to Fringe, and I think of Massive Dynamic as the name for the corporation doing what Raytheon's doing.
Yeah.
And it's the same story.
They're the ones that are controlling the Antarctica projects. They like have bases on Thule Island in the Arctic, and I think there's a Thule Island in the Antarctic too, but Raytheon is on both of those. And the Raytheon, the radar that detected those Tic Tac UFOs that everyone's been talking about in the last few months,
that was
Raytheon radar. Like, they're the ones who created that radar. So they're tied into all this stuff, but it just seems to go, they go unmentioned in a lot of these articles. It's always Lockheed Martin, comma Boeing, comma, et cetera. But they don't ever mention Raytheon.
Right. But
they should, in my opinion, which says to me that they're actually the ones doing a lot of this stuff. And we got a lot of them in the Merrimack Valley up here, like north of Boston. There's like six of them around. And there's also like 5 Lockheed Martins. They just put a Lockheed literally 1 minute from my house. Like, if there was no trees, I could probably throw a tennis ball and hit Lockheed Martin.
That's creepy.
I just moved in like 2 months ago, probably. Yeah.
Well, Massachusetts was seemingly founded by the Rosicrucian magical order. Have you gone to the Johannes Calpius cave or lodge?
I haven't. Where
okay, it? You got to look into this. Because one, you can't find Calpius cave.
I can't find any caves around here. That's a big part of this. Yeah,
go on. Yeah, yeah. It's kind of one of those mysterious things that if you find it, you're meant to find it. Wow. And I have a friend who found it and has been in there. You can go to Rosicrucians in Massachusetts, and you'll see the Johannes Calpius Lodge. And I found it interesting. The quote that they have on here kind of fits with what we're saying. Now, just so people are catching on, we're saying that this area, Massachusetts, is in a portal spot that we're going to get into understanding that more with a little Lovecraft and get deeper into that. But we're looking at a place on the planet that's been untouched by megalithic builders from around the globe, this entire continent, but this place, Massachusetts, seems to hold so many spots that might have thin veils that allow other dimensions to come through. And so then we find that these major tech corporations, Raytheon, and like you said, that means, rays of the god On, the star of the god On, the king of the god On, depending if you want to take it to French. But, it's right there with you, but the Rosicrucian magical order is one that is also often excluded from people's, secret societies. You hear about Freemasons, you hear about Skull and Bones, you hear about even the Jesuits, but the Rosicrucians are often ignored. And it's believed by the Rosicrucians that they were founded by Akhenaten. But this quote, I don't know if it's worth reading, but I'm going to try it. As our consciousness progresses spiritually and mystically, we will no longer think of our purpose and our meaning as being singular and confined to the short span in which we will live on this earth. Makes me think of those brains coming back to life. Yeah. Instead, we will begin to think of our lives and our contributions as part of that great and glorious continuum of life that we share in space and time. Our oneness in that eternal chain of events of which we are a part and to which we are to make our contribution is cosmically designed to elevate, refine, and evolve not only the consciousness of humanity, but also the manifestation of the great universal consciousness on all planes for centuries to come.
Wow.
Right? Wow. So yeah, the AMORC, AMORC, the ancient order of the Rosicrucians. They have a temple there's a cave connected. There's a cave that Johannes Kelpius found, and I wish I had asked my friend about the details on that cave, because it was one of the landing spots. You see, Rosicrucians were one of the first people to this country.
Yeah. So with the cave, or first, caves you can connect obviously directly to the inner earth. So caves is one of the first things I started looking for. And I live on, they call it Indian Ridge. I don't know what the real name for the ridge is, but it's a glacial ridge and there should be, caves around here. Like the way it works with the glacier would slide through and create these as they slide through, the friction causes the glacier to melt and the water seeps into the rocks and freezes and expands. And then after the ice age is over, it'll melt and reveal these caves. And that's what causes these caves along these ridges. But as far as Google would tell you, there are none. I cannot find any. There's maybe an hour from me north of New Hampshire, and then maybe another 45 minutes south in around Bridgewater, maybe you might have some caves. But in my region, they call Andover the heart of America. That's how they dubbed it. It's one of the first places they went to. And there's, I don't know, it's eerie how there's no entrances to the inner earth around here. It makes me think that maybe they're occupied by something like a Raytheon or like one of these things you're talking about, or maybe like this Rosicrucian cave. But then also the caves make me think of a cave is just one example of what these ancient Atlanteans or ancient secret societies or these ones with this ancient knowledge would use to have this initiation ritual, this shamanic ritual where they go into the king's chamber, the pyramids, or a grotto, or a mound, or whatever, something with this resonant ability to have this three-day ritual where they see the shining ones or the radiant god or whatever, and then they come back initiated or as this enlightened. Whatever, So is it that kind of cave where you come back?
Okay. I found it. You want to hear this?
Yeah, please, please.
Okay. It turns out it's in Philadelphia.
Okay.
Which also makes sense.
Yeah.
But the Johannes Kelpius lodge is there in Massachusetts.
Where, I'm definitely going to look at it afterwards.
We can dig that up.
No, that's very interesting. Yeah.
I thought they might have it right here. Oh, Alston, Massachusetts.
Yeah, that's halfway through the country. It's on the pike. It's an hour from me, probably.
Okay, so check this out. Cave of Kelpius. where America's first doomsday cult awaited the end of the world.
Oh, man.
All right. Tucked away in a remote section of Philadelphia's Fairmount Park, you'll find the Kelpius Cage.
Fairmount.
Cave. Fairmount, yeah.
Mount, ancient mountain.
And we're going to get into that, too. Yeah. You know, the second hour is going to be awesome. This is all the build-up, folks. So the Kelpius Cave, an enhanced cave built into the side of a hill with stone frame entrance marking what believed to be the 17th century home of America's first cult of mystics to predict the imminent apocalypse.
Wow.
So
what do they think was going to, like, I know you're reading off, but like, what, does it say what they believe would happen? Like,
yes. Okay. So Wisconsin Creek, or Wissahickon Creek, was settled in 1694 by the mystic and scholar Johannes Kelpius and his followers.
We'll get into that too, on a river, on a creek.
Right.
Yeah, that ties in very much. We'll get into that.
Okay. Believing, based on an elaborate interpretation of the Book of Revelation, that the world was going to end that year, 1694, the monks sought to live a solitary lifestyle in the wilderness while waiting the ends of days in the second coming. The group was known as Hermits of the Wissahickon, the Society of the Women of Wilderness. The latter is a reference to the passage in Revelation, which the women flees to the wilderness to seek refuge from the end of the world. So there seems to have been 40 monks. The monks fled their home of Germany to the newfound province of Philadelphia, where they could find religious tolerance.
Yeah, that's what they say.
A group of 40 monks erected 40 square foot tabernacle.
Yeah, 40 is a one of these big time Templar ritual numbers. I don't have the exact definition of what it means in front of me. You might know better than me. But
I remember that, but I can't think of it either.
Yeah, I can't think. But 40 is, people will know what that. 40 is big time.
So there you have it. You know, everybody's heading your direction for the end of the world. Looks like we're getting there.
I think it's it's a global thing though. I mean, I don't think that Massachusetts is necessarily unique in that we have portal here. I just think that I was able to like find this theory that we're going to be talking about because I was digging into just my specific region, and I think the threads are interesting. But I think that like this is in everyone's backyard, and this is one of these things that we can, as like a fringe or conspiracy or whatever you want to say, communities can actually do to like map. I think this knowledge of where these portals are is the secret information, or a part of this secret information that separates the elites, or whatever you want to call them, to in the rest of the world, you know. And I think that these portal spots or window areas or anything, like whatever you want to say, is scattered all over the planet. And you can picture like acupuncture needles on like the best acupuncture you've ever seen, with thousands of needles, which I've never had it done to me, but I think the idea behind it is those are unclogging your energy vortexes in the human body. And you can, as above, so below, microcosm, macrocosm, translate that to the earth body. So to picture hundreds of thousands of, if not maybe like more, all over the earth. And they're obviously different sizes and they do different things. Like I think Egypt and Jerusalem, and London, and New York, Washington, D.C., whatever, are bigger ones. They would be, you imagine a map with like pins all over it, they will be some big fat tacks. But also like in all of our towns, even if you think there's nothing in your town, there might be a little pin there. Like they say in New England especially, they founded churches at the center of the town so that everyone can be quote unquote equidistant from God, or the same distance from God. But I mean, I believe that what they really were doing was the first ones here got the information of where these nodal points are, where these portals are, these places where the veil is thin, and they put the church on that, and they drew the town lines around that. So they didn't throw the church in the middle. They built the town. They put the church on the node and built the town around this spot. Does that make sense? And then in different locations, they're different sizes. They do different things. So Raytheon or Area 51 or Washington, D.C. or Egypt or wherever, those are like major ones to varying degrees, but also I think golf courses, highways, churches, buildings, like places we don't have access to that are controlled by the powers that be, so they can use them whenever they need to use them. Sunspot that happened last year, remember that? They're all of these areas, and they're all in the control of the powers that be. And this secret information of this portal system, like missing 411, I think ties directly into that. And like reservation areas are created to control these portals, and people are slipping in and out of them because they open on different times. And the schedule of these openings, the schedule of how this whole system works, could be, to borrow a term from like Walter Bosley, the real breakaway civilization. Like, it might not be tech, it may be much older than that, and it could be this pre-tech knowledge, if that makes any sense. You know? Sorry, I'm rambling.
No, it's great. It's great. You got me thinking about, as I started to dig in and I came across the idea that H.P. Lovecraft had given away too many of the secrets and that he was murdered for this. And so I got curious, what was H.P. Lovecraft writing about? And I opened it up, and I had already studied Zechariah Sitchin and, all of the tales of Enki and Enlil. And I wish that that information hadn't gotten so diminished by people just saying, oh, he's a liar, and not looking at all the intriguing evidence, whether or not, Sitchin had the story correct or whatever, the evidence is there. It's really bizarre and amazing when you study Enki and Enlil and Ishtar and Inanna, and you start to put all that together and maybe tie in some Battlestar Galactica. But
yeah, big time. Yeah. And I mean, I don't think like any of these things should be taken exactly, literally, word for word at face value. They're like things like Lovecraft, or I was listening to your Portal episode with Craig. What's his name? The Detroit Portal episode. Do you remember that one from probably a few months ago? You started the episode talking about Stanley dying and Jack Kirby. And you're talking about the how like Kirby. Not only there's like the CIA aspects of comics, there's like this channeling of information, and like they receive in these big time concepts. So I think like something like Lovecraft or something like Sitchin, like that's just a piece of the thing. Just because you'll find one wrong piece of information in it doesn't mean you should throw the baby out with the bathwater. And there can still be some valuable information in that, you know?
Yeah, well, I didn't expect Cthulhu. I honestly had no idea that that's what Lovecraft was writing about when I started to read. I was shocked to find these ancient Sumerian tales retold about ritual magic conjuring these horrific fish beings, you know?
So I think I might actually be living in Lovecraft country. So I should have done this in the beginning, but a big shout out to Lindsay of Rogue Ways. She's the one who sent your producer my information and everything. And I had appeared on her podcast. It's like my only other podcast appearance ever, to talk about my region in Massachusetts. So I went through all these threads, like 2 hours worth of threads. And then that was probably 6 months ago. And then 2 months ago, I started reading Lovecraft for the first time.
Right.
And I realized that there are scholars that debate where he's actually talking about. It takes place in Massachusetts, but it's a fictional Massachusetts. There's real, like Arkham and Dunwich are fake places, but Salem and Ipswich are real places, you know?
Right.
And the maps are not real Massachusetts maps. Like Salem and Newburyport and these rivers, like the Merrimack River that I'm talking about, that is like one of the focal points of my research, is on his Lovecraft map. Like this is Lovecraft country, I think. And I think Andover that I've been talking about might actually be the real Arkham. And I think like Dunwich might be like a Deerfield type place like you mentioned before. You know what I mean? So he's using like, he's interchanged, he's like, it's buried in there, but what he's talking about is exactly right. And like
kind of like Castle Rock with Stephen King.
Oh man, like yeah, yes. And so did you watch Castle Rock, the show on Hulu?
I haven't yet.
I did. So like I listen. I'm big into like pop culture and like pulp. Like I read comics, and I'm into superheroes and that kind of stuff. Like that's my other side of my passions, like, along with this. But a lot of times it fuses into like there's a lot of connections between the two of them.
No doubt.
So one of my comic podcasts is hosted by Kevin Smith, and his co-host Mark Bernard is one of the writers on Castle Rock. So I went in thinking, oh, it's gonna be cool. So it's filmed in Worcester, which is like in Mass. It's like an hour away from me. And then it's about, like, no spoilers, not really, but there's a portal in Castle Rock. Like, that's part of the mythos, and that's in the show. And it's a vortex. I don't think they call it a portal. I think they might call it a vortex. But it's like two realities, like, rubbing up against each other, is this location in Castle Rock. And that's what causes, like, all the Stephen King madness. And in the show, so it's like, say, 10 episodes, nine of them were filmed in Worcester. And then the one where they actually introduced the portal concept, the vortex concept, is probably like 7 episodes in. It's the one written by the person, like the host of that show that I'm a fan of. It's the one he wrote. It's the one where they introduced the vortex, and it was filmed in my town where I think the vortex is. It was filmed in my town. It was the only one not filmed in Worcester. Think about that. That's a synchronicity if I've ever seen one, you know?
Yeah, tell us a little bit. We got about, 10 minutes left. Tell us a little about your region and what you had discovered there. So kind of set the stage for the second hour.
So just to kind of tie to things like people might have heard of, like the Salem Witch Trials were very close to. So I'm from Tewksbury, they call it the Merrimack Valley. So that's the area, like I said, like 15 minutes north of Boston, 15 minutes south of New Hampshire. And at the time of the Salem Witch Trials, Andover and Salem were side by side. So right now we're like 15 minutes from Salem, and there's a few towns in between. But at the time, it was the two side by side towns. And there's actually more people accused, like more witches accused and more witches confessed in Andover than any other town during the witch trials, including Salem. So it really should have been called the Andover Witch Trials. And the fact that they don't call it that, I think it's kind of, I mean, the fact that, like, we don't get any credit for the witch trials, I think it's kind of weird. Like, what are they really hiding here?
Right.
So, oh, sorry. Let me look at my notes real quick. Sorry. But, the first woman, I haven't heard anybody talk about this, but I kind of like stumbled upon it. The first woman killed in the witch trials, like accused and killed in the witch trials, was accused by the one of the elites in Andover at the time, like one of the founder, like one of the his like the family's founder of the town, and he has a building named after him at Phillips Academy, where the Bushes went. And the woman accused, she was married to, her name was Martha Carrier, and she was married to Thomas Carrier, who changed his name. He was over 7 feet tall. He was said to be over 100 years old, and that's obviously legend. But he was very, very tall, and he apparently fled England because he's the one who swung the axe to execute King Charles to set off the British like Revolution or whatever in England, which caused maybe a big chunk of time where they didn't have, like, it was like a, they didn't have like a monarchy. And so then during this, the witch trials, which I think was a blood sacrifice, a ritual sacrifice. It wasn't actually like a religious scare. It was like a charged up ritual sacrifice, was linked. The first person killed was directly linked to a major political death of a king in England, you know? So if this, some kind of, so if America itself is some kind of, this mystical point, like some kind of mystical purpose for America, like they're trying to direct, you know what I mean? Like that perhaps that ritual was linking this greater, like, generational ritual, you know what I mean?
So kind of that cosmic consciousness that the Rosicrucians are talking about, yeah. They wanted to embed it with the darkness.
Yeah, like, yes. So, like, I think that, yeah, there's a dark side to this stuff. So I don't know if we want to like get into all this big stuff right now, but like I think that this grid, this like portal grid, this like acupuncture needles that I talked about, this is like the fabric of reality. This is if we talk, we're not want to talk about we're living in a matrix or in a simulation. This is like what it's tough to find the words for it because it's not in our dimension, but like it's like the Indra's web that links the entire universe together. It's like the fabric of reality. It's like, so to do the rituals on these nodes, to have like an event like Notre Dame or an event like the New Zealand Christchurch massacre on these portal locations, on these nodal points, makes the structure of reality, it influences it. So the same way acupuncture, where you put the needles in L7, J5, whatever, in order to heal your back or something, that same thing applies. If you do a ritual act, if you do a blood sacrifice on the L7, whatever needle point of the earth body, an effect takes place, you know? So like in, to bring it back to Lovecraft, in a Dunwich Horror, that takes place in like a facsimile version of America's Stonehenge in New Hampshire. And this is like the main character of the story is doing these rituals at this stone, these stone circles and like cattle mutilations and then eventually maybe human killings on the stone sites. And then it causes these great rumbles and shakes and fire in the sky because he's trying to open these portals to bring these ancient ones in. And I think that's like these titans or these Lovecraftian, these cosmic entities, like the hordes of, like, to collapse the fabric of reality that separates the realm, the three-dimensional realms with the other realms.
You know, release Yog-Sothoth.
100%. Yes, exactly. And because they're this they don't believe that they'll suffer the consequences.
You just reminded me, and I had forgotten about this, that within the Necronomicon, we find that the best place, according to the magicians of this practice, to call upon Cthulhu or Yog-Sothoth or these Sub-Mariner was from an oil rig. And I had connected this to the major oil rig destruction. Wow, it won't come back. I thought it would come back if I started talking about it.
The movie Mark Wahlberg is in.
It was in the movie. It was in the movie while it was actually happening, or the movie came out right as the actual event was about to occur. And I can't remember what was so weird about it that made me connect it to the rising of Cthulhu.
I've heard a lot about it in context with like the black goo. So people were getting sick, the ones who were trying to deal with it, and it was causing a lot of people, like, they immediately blocked everybody. I don't know. There's a lot of weird stuff going on. People were getting really sick, and they think that something, the oil wasn't really oil. It was like this kind of black goo or something from
right, which appears in all of these sci-fi shows. You know, it's in the X-Files. That's what the aliens are. It's in Fringe. It came up in the episodes there. And again, this idea that oil is actually this living entity that, you know, take over our souls and like, create black-eyed children, right?
Yeah, it's like venom. It's like this entity, that wants to take over. I mean, it's kind of in Stranger Things. Did you watch the new Stranger Things?
Yeah.
It's like it wasn't black in this case, but it was like this gooey thing that tries. It's like a way for this the Mind Flayer, this Lovecraftian entity, to create something in this reality. It's like it creates like almost like a homunculus, or not really, but like a it's like the medium in which this thing from the other realm that doesn't exist in our realm can enter it, you know, like that's the goal. Like, so all these little deals that Skull and Bones or whatever are trying to make in order for power or knowledge or whatever, that's happening on a small scale. Like, they're doing these rituals and these deals for these small favors, but I think the end game, this large grand thing, it's not like just the bushes. It's like all of humanity. Like, it's like whatever is important enough to like have generational power, to get generation after generation to agree to go along with this kind of stuff. That's what I'm talking about. The end game,
right?
You collapse this grid that separates the structure of reality to allow, like, Laird Scranton talks about, like, how like the nature of how realities are, or universes are formed in pairs, the seen and the unseen. And like the seen reality is us. It's like a three-dimensional world. And we live in, like, we're trapped within time and space. Like, we don't know anything. We don't know what happens in the future. We're not all knowing, but we can affect physical reality. And the unseen, they're outside of space and time. That's everything else. That's whatever, ghosts and interdimensional stuff, angels, whatever. But it's everything else. And they are outside of time, so they have they're all knowing, but they can't manipulate physical reality. And for some reason, I guess that's important to them. And the little deals, I guess it would be good and bad, but as far as the grand dark scheme. It's to break that, to merge the unseen, to seen and unseen into one, to create this, you mean? So they can enter this apparently sacred place that we're living in right now, you know?
Without a doubt, folks. And we're going to pick this up on the other side because there's so much more. It's going to get so much freakier. And if I can freak you all out just a little bit more, one of the early times of trying to open these portals and working of magic was Aleister Crowley's work on the Loch Ness as he tried to open the portals to this other dimension. And we got to realize that it was just after this, and he was known not to have closed those portals. Can't think of the name of the working, but
Babylon Working.
The Babylon Working, thank you. And on the Loch Ness, he had opened these portals at his home that was later bought by Jimmy Page. And, you know, this, folks, coincides exactly with the timing of the rise of flying saucers, Roswell. I mean, Crowley died right before the Roswell incident or right after the Roswell incident.
They actually, something just popped up on Facebook. They're actually opening that, they're selling that house now, the Crowley house.
That's exactly where I was going, guys. The Crowley house is back open for business, and it's going to be used for sex rituals openly, as we find now that we have swinging festivals going around. The UK just had to deal with Swinger Fest, but most people were okay with it. They didn't mind. But yes, for opening these portals, sex magic ritual has been at the heart of all of this, which explains a lot of the stories that we're getting with the Epstein and the Clintons and all of that.
Crowley actually, in that article about the selling of the house, he had this magical retirement starting in 1913, and he moved to New Hampshire at Newfound Lake, or Lake Newfound, where it's the source of this river, the Merrimack River, that runs through the county that I'm talking about and is in Lovecraft mythology, the Merrimack.
There you have it, folks. This is all ties together. There's no separation between these magical practices, merfolk, Cthulhu, and Raytheon, you know? So realize that this all ties together in this crazy cosmos that we have, and we need to get out there and play with reality more. Because taking it so serious is going to let these sinister ones take all the power they need, because they play upon our egos and they get us to storm the banks because they need us to do that. And so, as we're saying, each time they release something, be it UFO disclosure or Epstein's sex pedophile ring, these are released for a purpose, and a purpose is your consciousness. And this is what they are affecting and what they are attempting to control, so that when they open the portals of dimension, it's not a golden age, but this darkness. And I don't know why these people are so tied to the dark side, but they are, and we can see that. We're going to get deeper and deeper into this. I just saw that Johannes Kelpius actually came from Transylvania. And you guys might not know this, but the world's most sophisticated laser particle collider has been built in Transylvania, which might be another one of these portal spots. So we're definitely going to get to CERN, the relativistic heavy ionic collider manipulating space-time, and maybe even a little more about Transylvania and the vampires there. Who knows? But you guys want to stay tuned. Derek Murphy is our guest this evening, and he's a wonderful person. I love that your call to fame is calling in on the shows and blowing the people's minds, because you're right from my heart, man. You are right from my heart.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here. It's really fun. Thank you.
All right, guys. So we're going to pick this up on the other side. And believe me, it's going to get into some serious high strangeness. We've barely scratched the surface. This was all just to fill you in on the ideas where we're going. So thank you all so much. And Tracy, we're going to miss you big time. I can't believe that. It just really shocks. But that's the way it goes. A lot of us, once we start to learn about these things, we really don't want to be on this planet anymore. And your consciousness can easily tell you that you don't want to be here. But it's something we all, I believe, chose to come and do. And yeah, it's hard. It's difficult, especially when you're awake and aware. But we got to recognize creative play. as the true power of humanity and turn towards that more and more and turn to one another more and more so that we can move out of these institutionalized systems that are gaining control using black magic in strange portals. So thank you all so much for tuning in every week here on freemantv.com. And if you're not yet a subscriber, you know, come check it out. It helps supply this show, keeps the free shows free, keeps everything going because, you know, it costs money to take this server time. Anyway, you know, it helps everybody. It's a great thing you can do. Just come over to freemantv.com and subscribe and, you know, try it out for a month. There's 15 years of content on freemantv.com anyway. So just come over here anyway and just click something. It doesn't matter what, but I would recommend starting with the Freeman perspective. Go over to freemantv.com, mouse over watch and go down to the Freeman perspective and start at the beginning because that's where this hypothesis starts and pretty much ends here with Derek Murphy because that is, you know, the ultimate outcome of everything that we have been saying here so long. So Derek, is there any way people can get in touch with you or, you know, are you running any sort of social media or anything that you want to share?
I'm on Facebook. Feel free to reach out to me if you want to, friend request me. I don't post that much stuff on my real page, but I'm in a group called Eyes Open with Lindsay, and that's the group that Rogue Ways is a part of that you were on, the appearance you were on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a really nice group, and they're open to all this stuff, and it's a great place to bounce these ideas off of. But as far as my own work, I don't have any. And if you want to talk to me, I'm there, but I don't have anything yet for you to read.
I am not. I have been banned from Facebook for 5 years, so you know what am I gonna do?
I'm just a chronic procrastinator, and so I wanted to do something like this, but I just never got around to it. But I actually made a trailer a few weeks ago of like the show I wanted to make. So if you search "Who is the Night Stalker" on YouTube. It's like a 2-minute video of what I wanted to do for a show, but never got around to doing. So other than that, there's nothing out there. So.
All right. Well, we'll get more people heading your way to pull that documentary off because I know it'll be worth it.
Thank you.
So, all right, guys, we will see all of you next week. Members, let's get on into this. We'll see you there. All right, guys. Bye. We'll be right back.